Empire.
Hello and welcome to my podcast. Do me a favor, subscribe to the John Kahn Report wherever you get your podcast. You're watching on YouTube, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. You can find us there as part of Empire Media. That's A-M-P-I-R-E. Always much appreciated when you tune in. And don't forget, you can read my work on ESPN.com. I have a story now about how important this draft is to the Commanders. I think we all know why, but it goes beyond the number two pick. So give it a read and go from there. Also, you gold members, I have the private Zoom Monday night, 7:30 Eastern time. Join me there. Bring your questions. Nice little Q&A for you guys. And then it'll be available to the rest of the members after that. Also, in a minute, I'm going to be joined by ESPN's Jeff Lagwald. He released his top 100 list on Saturday. I wasn't sure when I talked to him. I couldn't remember if it was coming out Saturday or Sunday, but it was Saturday. So it's out there now. Go give it a read on ESPN.com. It's always, always, always an informative list. You may disagree with it, and that's fine. Like, the whole point of scouting is there's a lot of disagreements. If every scout had everything the same, it'd be quite easy to go get guys. There is a wide range of opinion on many guys. And there are some guys, like I told you, like there's some guys that hear he could go 20th and or his range is 20 to 60. So it just tells you, like, and it could be a small variance that pushes them down on one team's board compared to another team's. They may have them similar in terms of similar style or similar talent level, but maybe just a couple things might bump them down on one board and keep them up on the other. So anyways, I always like having Leggy on. I think he's as informative as anybody out there. And, you know, I know a lot of people put a lot of work into this. I don't think it'd be hard pressed to say anybody puts in more work than Jeff Lagwald on this, because he talks to a ton of people anyway, but so he's informed, and you may disagree with his opinions or his lists, and that's okay. Like, the whole, there's become this thing that it's like, nobody's allowed to disagree with maybe an opinion on a guy. And I personally, like, there might be a guy you like, but if you can't see a good in some other guys, then I think you kind of need to reevaluate maybe how you look at the game, because a lot, especially with these quarterbacks, they all offer something of value. That's why they're being considered for the number two pick. Also, another programming note, I do hope to have some of the beat reporters on this week to make their first round pick. And I really hope we don't agree on the same guy, because I think it's more interesting we don't, because I think there's a lot to like about each of these quarterbacks in play. And again, that's Jaden Daniels, JJ McCarthy, and of course, Drake May. So, and how Washington sees it, well, we'll find out on Thursday night. Only a few more days, thank goodness. And I did tell you the other day, and I still would say this, like, I am not assuming that it goes, that it's between Jaden Daniels and Drake May. I think JJ McCarthy is very much in the mix. So, but, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. And so I'm going to have them on, and then I'm also going to have a couple other things as we lead into the draft to get you ready. And thank goodness around 8:15 on Thursday night, we'll all be put out of our misery, or 8:20 maybe it is, somewhere around there. We'll be put out of our misery and just move on, and then see whoever they draft, can they make it? Can they be the guy finally for this franchise? Anyways, it's enough for me. Let's get some insight on all this stuff and a lot of other picks in this draft from ESPN's Jeff Lagwald. Trades, free agents, quarterbacks, and all kinds of adventures await the Commanders this offseason. Looking for an adventure of your own? The Adventure Park at Sandy Spring has you covered. The country's largest ropes course and zipline park, located in Montgomery County, Maryland, is now open. Named Best Amusement Park and Climbing Destination in the DMV 2 years in a row, the Adventure Park at Sandy Spring is perfect for birthdays, corporate outings, groups, and families. With challenges anywhere from beginner to expert, there is something for all skill levels. Anytime you're thinking about reaching new heights, make sure you know before you go. The Adventure Park at Sandy Spring is the only ACCT accredited park in Maryland or Virginia. Staying on the ground, give axe throwing a try. You can throw at traditional targets or play any number of interactive games. You can even upload your own image. So there you have it, folks. Climbing, ziplining, axes, food, and bonfires right in your backyard. Reserve your adventure today at www.theadventurepark.com/kine. That's www.theadventurepark.com/kine. All right, Leggy, one of the highlights for us every year is the Legworld Top 100. And that came out Sunday. And
Saturday morning.
Oh, I'm sorry. Saturday morning. Okay. Yep. I'm a little behind. Anyway, always an interesting list. I do want to, before we get into some of the rankings and all that, what is your methodology for compiling this list? What, you know, because obviously your list is going to be different than others, which I always appreciate, because people, it's funny because some people want every list to look the same, but you go to different teams and their draft boards are going to look dramatically different too. So what is your methodology in compiling this list?
Well, John, I always tell people I was taught by one of the greatest scouts of all time, C.O. Bricado, the late C.O. Bricado. They still do drills that C.O. invented at the combine. He is renowned in the scouting world. That there's an organization that has a lifetime achievement award named for him in scouting. So C.O. is the guy who spent hours and hours with me, essentially training me as if I was a young scout who had been sent out on the road with him. So I grade the players the way CO taught me throughout the season. I usually start in September and go throughout the season, and then really pick it up again before the combine and the Senior Bowl up to the draft. So the biggest portion is my grades. And then I will talk to dozens and dozens of scouts, personnel guys, GMs, just to kind of, each team calls it something different. Some teams call it pods, some teams call it clusters, but you're always going to have a group of players with the same grade and you still want to stack them. So that's where I use some of the other opinions out there is to break up my clusters and really stack. And in the end, I usually get between 580, 600 players done. It's just me. You know, I can't dive into all of the things the teams do, but I do my best and I go from there.
But you talk, like you said, you talk to a lot of scouts, executives, coaches
throughout the year. Yeah. At the Senior Bowl, I'll talk to as many people as possible. At the combine, I usually come away with, between my notes and actual recorded interviews, I'll have 250 interviews at the combine from people. So again, usually when I'm getting other people's opinion, it's to get the latest injury information I can, and then to break up my clusters when I have groups of players with sort of the same grade on them.
You know, it's funny because, and I'll get into that in a minute, but like you hear from people who I think from an outsider's perspective, that sometimes if you have a tackle rated 7th and another one rated 10th or whatever, they're people feel like there's this big gap. But I hear from people all the time that it's not, the gap between 7 and 10 or whatever the number is not as vast as people think.
Yeah, John, I think the two things folks who are interested in the draft, fans or any of us, are interested in the draft, I think two things they misjudge is the amount of movement a player makes on the board late. Like there isn't this multi-round movement of players between January and April. That's very uncommon. The movements are very subtle between teams. Around, if a team moved a player around, that would be pretty drastic. And I think that and what you're saying, and I think the amount of differences between the boards of each team, I think would shock people. If we were all allowed to see all 32 boards, I think we would be shocked at the divergent opinions about, like, from player 11 on down to the end of the draft. I mean, the top of the board, you know, usually sounds the same for most teams, or, you know, but I think beyond that, there's a bigger variety than people realize.
Well, there are a lot of times here, we're all here, like some scouts would have a third round grade on a guy and some scouts would have a first round grade on a guy, you know? Yeah. And so you're always, and I always tell people, like, sometimes the discussions that we have amongst, whether it's amongst fans, amongst media, like there's divergent opinions there. It's same in the building. It's hard to get a consensus on every guy. So you try to reach, you know, some level of finality to it. What have you made of with Washington and the quarterback stuff, right? And taking it down to the wire with four, you know, they brought the four guys in. Mm-hmm. I don't think all four guys are really in contention for that second spot. But what have you made about their process with that? And, you know, the belief like, okay, they hadn't settled on a guy. I do think they probably had a strong lean one way or another. But what have you made about their whole process?
Well, Adam Peters was here.
Right.
And Adam, when he was here, you knew he was going to be a personnel director or GM someday. That is a good football man. He has been around, what, three Super Bowl teams now? The construction of three Super Bowl teams. One of them that won it here. It doesn't shock me how he's approached it because that's how he learned it. And it was an enormous fact. They haven't really, in some ways, recovered from him leaving here to join John Lynch in San Francisco. But I knew when John got hired, he would come for Adam. Everybody in the building knew. So their process is exactly sort of what I would expect from him. They really did well, in my opinion. I think awfully highly of Adam, and he's a great, he's got a good eye. And I think what will be structured the best is in how they make this decision. And it's tough for him because he's making what will probably be one of the biggest decisions of his tenure right out of the gate. And that's always tough, but you don't always get hired by a team that's rolling along doing well. So you're often earlier in your career as a personnel guy, you're going to be in position to make some of the biggest decisions you're ever going to make because that's just how you got the job in the first place. So I think their process is what I would expect from him. And he will make a football decision. And I guess that's the best way I can phrase it. He won't make a hype decision. He won't make a public opinion decision. He will make a football decision that he thinks is best.
He involves a lot of people in this process. I guess it depends on how somebody handles all that information, but how do you think he'll end it? Because you could look at it and say a lot of cooks in the kitchen, right? Or it's like, hey, you're getting a lot of opinions and you're going to process everything.
Well, that's how he learned it. I mean, that's how Elway did it here when he was GM. And look, I don't know many people in the world who are more decisive than Elway on his own, but he was very much about sort of hearing, he wanted all the information and then make the call. And I think that's the way John Lynch has done it in San Francisco. And, you know, they have a very strong opinion in Kyle Shanahan and, you know, their coaches involved in San Francisco and a lot of the personnel decisions. So I think that's the way he's learned it. But I don't think he'll have any hesitation when it's time for him to take all the information and just say, okay, this is the direction we're going.
What do you know about Lance Newmark? Because he's another guy that's been, I think he was one of the more under the radar moves they made this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I don't know as much as I or have as much experience like you do with Adam, but you know, I think they're well constructed. I think that's one thing. And he was in no hurry to leave. Adam was no hurry to leave San Francisco, so he was going to structure it the way he wanted. And I think they've done exactly what I would have expected him to do as far as putting all that together and the people he wanted to work with.
Which quarterback do you think would appeal most to him?
In my mind, you know, to me, I ranked Caleb and Williams and Daniels have essentially the same grade for me. I stacked them with Caleb one spot ahead of Daniels only because, we're talking like down to the decimal point type of thing. But I think Daniels would appeal to them. And maybe I'm wrong, but that's just my gut from being around him. He and John Lynch both. And I think Daniels is the most ready to play of the group immediately, in my opinion.
What do you think would appeal most? And if you, you know, like you said, with John and with him, what do you, and by the way, well, I want to get into Jay in a minute too, but what do you think would appeal most to him to finalize that decision?
I think decision-making and composure, because when you draft a guy to be the face of a franchise and the expectation, I mean, that franchise is a lot like this one here. It isn't just a football team people follow. It's a lot more than that. And that can be a lot. I've said for years here, this place chews up quarterbacks and spits them out because there's no place to hide. If you're the Bronco quarterback, you can't go five states from here and hide anywhere. You know, if you're the Giants quarterback, you can go have lunch in the Village and there'll be a ton of people who don't care.
Right.
In the cafe, you know, that's not the case here. And I think Adam will be very cognizant of, you know, that's what they're really meeting about when they meet these guys in person. Not only can you do the job, it's can you handle the job? And I think that's the component they will be very interested in.
How close do you think it was between Jaden and Caleb in the scouts' eyes?
Well, it's you know, scouts will often tell you what flavor of ice cream do you like. I mean, Caleb's intrigue is the improvisational skills, the off schedule, the ability to create out of, you know, seemingly a play gone bad. But by the same token, he will have a lot of work to do. You know, some people believe he's far too quick to leave the pocket, far too quick to use those improvisational skills. In the NFL, it's about timing and getting the ball out. That this notion you're going to be able to run around all the time and create all the time is simply not going to work. So I think Daniels, I think, is, despite the fact he has absolutely no qualms about putting himself in harm's way, he's far more sort of quick decision making, get the ball out. And some of that was their offense and, you know, the receivers he had. But I think he, in his the one really spectacular season, he showed decisiveness and the ability to process quickly. And, you know, I've heard many things about how well he's done on the proverbial board, you know, when they ask him to retain information and diagnose plays and all those things they do when they meet with guys.
One of the things that you hear that from the analytics group will point out the pressure to sack ratio numbers. And I always say, like, when I've talked to people in the league, nobody brings up, they don't, not so much the stat, but they don't bring that up as an issue. Did you hear anything along those lines as an issue, like he takes too many sacks or anything like that?
Well, you know, I guess the best example of that through the years is, and I think Goff took 80 some sacks before he came out way back, you know, and it is an issue, but I think you, in the end, you end up dissecting each of them. You know, a team will look at all of them. You know, how many of these were on the quarterback? How many were on a bust up front? How many were on the play caller?
Right.
You know, you emptied out the backfield on third and 12 and you blocked 5-on-7 and you didn't get it done. You know, that type of thing. So they will go over it. Now, I have not heard that complaint.
Okay.
It's sort of an aside, you know, but you know, it's something you'd have to be careful about, kind of is what the, you know, people say. I just think the decision making is very clear. What do you throw? 4 picks? You know,
yes.
That's really, and one of them was very early in the season. So
I mean the receiver fell.
Yeah. So it's not something, it's something they are gonna look at, but to decide how many were actually on you. But it hasn't been a huge thing, I don't think.
The other thing you'll hear from fans who maybe prefer a Drake May is, okay, well, this is only the one great year. his first year at LSU seemed to be solid enough that he kind of vaulted into a top of the day three selection, right? So what would you say about that?
I'd much rather have an ascending player in my mind than that's just how I look at the draft. I think ascending players are what you want, and I don't think he's at the end of his curve yet. And I actually think that's a concern for some about May, is how much more is there in the development. But I, you know, physically, you know, May is the prototypical. I mean, if you talk to somebody in the 2000, early 2000s, 1990s, that's exactly how they would draw up a quarterback. So, you know, that's his sort of uniqueness on his board, on this board, is he is prototypically the physical quarterback. I think his hurdle will be finding the line between what I think I can do and what I can really do, because some of his decision-making, particularly in the red zone, that's going to red flag some scouts, because that can be difficult to fix at times. I mean, take a player like Jay Cutler, who was the SEC Player of the Year at Vanderbilt, and it was always trying to lift an undermanned team, much like Drake May when he played college. So he took risks all the time. And he threw a lot of red zone interceptions as an NFL quarterback. And that's always something to be cognizant of in a guy's development. But in general, like, back to your question, I love ascending players. I think that's exactly what you're looking for, especially on day one and early day two. You want ascending players with all of the traits that you like.
And for those listening, you had Caleb 5 on your top 100, Jaden 6, and then you have JJ McCarthy at 22 and Drake at 23. So
those are my first two grades of the second round. I have 21 first round grades this year. So
okay, so you have them as top of the second round grades.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I just think my list has traditionally been where the quarterbacks sort of belong, and even the team that takes McCarthy likely will not have him in that slot on their board. They'll never admit it, ever. But I always say there are two draft boards. So there's a quarterback board and there's everybody else. Right. And that's always been the case, always will be the case, because the desperation, and I think the desperation level league-wide is at an all-time high. The stat I've been telling people is if four quarterbacks go in the top 12 this year, four quarterbacks in the top 12, it will be the fifth time since the merger that's happened. Only the fifth time. And four of those will now have come since 2011.
Right.
So the desperation level league-wide is sort of matching the fan, you know, desire to have a franchise quarterback. So I think it's a very different environment. Quarterbacks are getting overdrafted, and even the league is accepting it now.
Why do you have JJ the one spot ahead? And obviously it means you're very close, but why do you have them there?
Again, it's an ascending thing. It's a quirky, there's no sort of mathematic multiplier, but I tend to lean toward players with higher ceilings with a developmental curve. You know, McCarthy is, the risk is you don't have the data. You simply don't have the data. I think he had 27 games in his career when he had 15 or fewer completions. I mean, that's unbelievable in this day and age. So, I mean, there are certain coverages, combinations, people may not have even seen him complete a pass against, you know, and you might go to Daniels or May or Caleb Williams, and you've seen six of them in a half. You know, so it's McCarthy. The risk on McCarthy is you don't have the data, so you really are projecting. But I like the projection, and there's just a toughness in his game I think it takes to survive being a rookie quarterback in the NFL and moving on from that first year.
Last thing about quarterbacks too, with Daniels playing in the SEC, going up against guys like Saban, how much more info did that give you?
And you know. SEC players are the safest bets on the board because they essentially play NFL football every week. You know, the corners are better. The schemes are better. I mean, you look at the types of defenses SEC teams are running weekly. You don't see that kind of aggressiveness. Defensive backs with hands on receivers. You just don't see it in the other leagues. I can go one game with Daniels. I watch Daniels against Alabama. I'll get more information than I will Caleb Williams in six of his games in that conference. It's just different. And that's why you see so many SEC players come off the board, because they know what it's like to compete on Wednesday to play in the game. They practice better. They're more ready to practice better. They meet better. They do everything better because they have to. I mean, look at the number of – I mean, look how hard it is to get on the field at Georgia. You know, Mims is one of the best tackles in the draft, the Georgia tackle. Yep. I think he played seven games at Georgia. It's just hard to get on the field at those schools. So, and the last thing I would add about just because I didn't have any of these quarterbacks graded as highly as I had C.J. Stroud last year, even though – I think I had Stroud 7 in my top 100 last year, but I thought the top of the board was a little better last year. But I didn't have any of these guys quite as high as I did C.J. Stroud last year. So I think this is a good class, but it's really – I continue to be amazed that it might be drafted as one of the greatest quarterback classes in history. And I didn't have one person tell me that during the season, not one. I never had anybody say this could be one of the best quarterback classes I've ever seen, yet there's a very good chance it is drafted like it.
But in terms of Daniels and Caleb, what grade might you compare them to in terms of quarterback, not necessarily style, but whether a quarterback's graded maybe similarly over the years?
Well, they were very close to Stroud in my mind, just at this point. We're talking just ticks on the meter. In sort of fairness or just sort of a comparison of where they would have fit. Like if they were on last year's board, I would have had them below CJ Stroud. I guess that's where I come down.
Let's go to the tackles, because this team needs a tackle too. And yeah,
there's a lot of them. Yeah,
there are. And it's funny because I think there's a lot of divergent opinions on them. And it's funny because like the name that I keep hearing lately is Roger Rosengarten. I don't even think you had him in there anywhere. He's a guy
That's one that may sting me. That may be the one he gets taken at 50 and you're like, people are like, you didn't even have him in there. Me, a very good player.
Yeah. So go ahead.
No, just the math didn't work out. I probably have him very close to being in. It's just,
it's hard.
It's a loaded tackle board and not all those tackles are going to go on day one and day two. There will be some late day two and early day three tackles who were probably graded one or two rounds above those picks.
If Washington, because there's a belief that maybe they trade back into the first round, but let's say they hold pat in the second round and with their first pick, who's a tackle that maybe would be there as who could come in and be a starting left tackle, maybe not from day one, but early in the season?
In the second round, you're talking?
Yeah, be high second round. So like that, I know like you have
You got guys like Guyton are in that mode. Jordan Morgan from Arizona. Mm-hmm.
They had another guy.
Yeah. And he's athletically, people were wondering this year what it would look like because he tore his ACL late in the 22 season, but he looked really good. So I think that the thought is he looked so good this past year. He'll by the time he gets to a training camp, he's going to be pretty well recovered and ready to move into the line. But he moves really well, and he's got kind of that modern tackle movement ability, which people really like.
So because they pick a 36 and 40.
And I like the Yale tackle down in the second round. Yeah, I like him a lot.
As a left tackle.
Yeah. Now he's coming off an injury, so I don't know how teams have. I've been sort of told anecdotally hey, not worried, but you know, I don't know where people have come down on that officially.
So I guess if they want to get the starting left tackle, do you feel like they could stay there and find one at 36 and or 40?
There might even be a couple with first round grades still on the board for them, you know, depending how deep they went with their, you know, certainly late first, early second round grade will be on the board somewhere.
Is there a tackle that you like where you say, I would trade up even 10 spots to get this guy?
10 spots is tough.
Or whatever it is. Yeah.
Whatever it is.
In the mid to end of the first, because I don't think they're going to trade up too high. Let's say, you know, 20 down below or 16 down below, whatever.
Yeah, the quirky one for me is I like Latham more than most.
Okay.
I've got him way high, but a lot of, you know, that's a player who may not be that high when the picks start getting made. And I like Mims. I'm fascinated with him as a player that there's just almost no resume. He only started 6 games at Georgia. But watching him work out, you know, I saw the pro day tape. I saw, you know, what he did at the combine. I mean, just to me, if my offensive line coach was on board and really fired up, that's a player I think that has an awful lot of. And people say he's a right tackle. And I think he can play either tackle spot and deserves a shot at it.
So the other spot they're looking high up would be defensive end. And even though they signed a few guys in the offseason, they brought in Marshawn Nealon. They brought in Chop Robinson. You had Chop at number 12. So
that's another player. Chop Robinson is the classic draft question through the years, as far back as you want to go. Production over potential and production. You know, those are your two sort of categories. There's always these high production players in college, 3, 4, 5 years of production. And then fans sort of wonder, why isn't this guy, more highly regarded as a pro prospect? It's the potential element.
Right, exactly.
You know, an NFL person, they love your production, but they really love your potential. And that's Chop Robinson. You watch what he can do on the game video, and you just wonder why he doesn't have 38 sacks in a season. You know, it's just that kind of ability. And that's the question you got to ask. You know, why wasn't there more? And, you know, how much more can there be? But athletically and just the way he's put together, he fits today's. That's a pressure player in today's NFL, and there's almost nothing more coveted other than a franchise quarterback than a pressure player who can impact. I mean, look at Micah Parsons, what he does on a, TJ Watt, look what he does on a weekly basis. If you have that guy, and, you know, Micah Parsons was an inside backer who people hoped. I see Chop Robinson as that kind of, you know, what will he be? And if you're creative and you're a good coach, you might really get something.
And that's what I can say. Like, who are those guys when you look at them? Like, this would be a Dan Quinn type player, and the way they like to use him and some versatility on the edge.
Yeah, versatility. I don't know if he's as versatile potentially, but I love Jared Verse is an edge player I really like, and I like him more than some, the Florida State.
Right.
And now he plays, I think Dan Quinn and any other former defensive coordinator, he plays with the foot to the floor all the time. There's no concern there. And I just, I always have to pause. He played 25 games at Florida State. And he had 18 sacks and 29 and a half tackles for loss in 25 games. That's week-to-week production. Consistent production. And when you add in his, the relentlessness of it, that's a player I really like on the edge. And, you know, Latu is the most proficient rusher technically. His handwork is a fifth-year NFL guy type of handwork. It's just the medical. You've got to, he was told by doctors not to play football again. And he didn't have any trouble at UCLA, but, you know, he's had spinal fusion surgery. So that's you know, his draft status will be fully in the hands of medical staffs, you know, around the league.
Okay, we got about 5 minutes left. So how deep do the DNs go, do you think, if you want to get an edge rusher? Because I think it feels like they do. How deep does it go?
Yeah.
Then you want to go to tight ends.
No, you can still get, I think, you know, you can go deep and get more situational guys down the board, but you're going to get, the thing about edge guys is they contribute immediately.
Right.
If you traditionally, you know, nothing's hard and fast rule, but traditionally, if you have rushed the passer with success in college, you will rush the passer with some kind of success in the pros if you do your part. Down the board, Austin Booker from Kansas is a guy I think people, yeah, and he's more quick than fast. Like, his 40 time isn't going to blow you away, but you watch him play and the first two steps are really, you know, and he's just scratching the surface of what he can be. And that, again, that's an ascending player that you want. And he's almost 6'5", so he's going to be able to add strength and not lose any of what he can do.
Corners, they're going to play more press man. Who fit, and they're looking at guys in the third round. Elijah Jones was a guy on your list too, 97. So who are a couple press man corners, or who can do a little bit more of that?
Well, you know, you don't see a lot of press man. Now his timed 40, you know, had people wringing their hands a little bit, and he improved a little on pro day, but I just think Kamari Lassiter played too many damn games at Georgia for people to tell me he can't play football. He wouldn't have been on the field. There were plenty of 4-3 guys on the depth chart that couldn't get him out of the lineup. So I think he's just a ball player. Okay. You know, I think you got to hide your eyes when you look at the stopwatch and just, you know, he isn't going to be fit man schemes all the time, but he's physical. So I think in the right combination of coverages, he could give a team something good. And again, if you've been on the field at Georgia, you can do something. TJ Tampa, Iowa State, really, he might be one of the most physical guys on the board. Might be one of the best tacklers at corner too. So, like, I remember Vic Fangio, that was always his number one thing on a corner. Everybody else would be looking at, you know, can he cover? Can he do this? Vic wanted guys who could tackle. Tampa's that guy on the board. Sandra Still from Michigan, I love as a nickel. I think he'll be one of the best nickel corners on the board. And then Abrams Drain from Missouri. I think those are all guys down in the second round, early third that I like.
Tight end depth.
Not a lot on this board.
That's what I say, because they want one, right? To pair with Zach Ertz. You had Sanders at number 40. I don't think you had Wiley on there, but you had Case over. No. So how deep is that class? And where should you get one?
It's not very deep. I like I like Sinnott down the board from Kansas State. I just think I tinkered with the idea of moving him. I did make him. They have me do the biggest draft risers story each year, and Sinnott was one of those guys I picked for that. I think he's a good value pick down the board, but it's thin.
How about Eric Gall? They had Eric Gall in here too. I know there's a medical thing with him, but what about him?
Yeah. That's the decision on him, is you got to decide, you know, how soon he's going to play and all of those things. I mean, people, the analytics part of tight end these days is teams think if you pick them high, you're almost at the, you know, the high end of the salary bracket for the position overall. So that makes people not want to dive in high on the board, which is why, you know, I've got Brock Bowers as one of my best players in this draft. It is unlikely he is taken there because of the math of it all, no matter how good he is. So, but it's a huge gap between the sort of the top two or three and then the rest. So,
and Sanders would be one of your top guys too.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the last thing too, like, one of the things I heard, Leggy, during this process is the 2025 class will be loaded. So teams should try to get picks next year. do you hear that? And, you know, if you're Washington, you have six in the top 100, do you use all of them or using that as capital to maybe move either up or into next year a little bit?
I think, John, I think sometimes teams know there is a sort of a danger of banking on the loaded class next year. You're sort of two ACLs, a meniscus tear, and a fractured fibula from taking what the loaded class down. So yes, they consider it, especially quarterback. I think sometimes teams will put that in the bank, what they think of the next quarterback class. And they will give it, every team will give it some thought for certain, but in the end, it's going to be about what's the vision of this player coming in right now. You know, if it's not a guy they think can make the 53 or even the practice squad now that they're expanded, you might be more apt to say, and the back of this board is a little light, and that's right. Going to be the issue, because everybody might, when you get to the late sixth or the seventh round this year, you're going to have a choice. You're going to have a choice of just picking a guy because you don't want to compete for him as an undrafted, or doing what you're saying, moving on and getting something for next year.
Leggy, you're the best. This is a draft that could transform this franchise. I appreciate your insight. Thanks a lot, man, as always.
Anytime. You're the best, John.
That's it for this episode. Thanks to Jeff for joining me, and thank you, as always, for tuning in. I'll be back, I believe, on Tuesday. I believe so. If not, it'll be Wednesday, but I believe Tuesday, with another episode. So I'll talk to you next time.